Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. We've got a really, really great topic for you today. My guest to help me facilitate this topic is Francesca Gentile. And she's an amazing woman. I've had the pleasure of meeting her in person. She is vivacious, beautiful, just exudes all kinds of positive energy. And she's got some amazing qualifications here. She's an initiated shaman in four traditions, a clinical sexologist, an empowered aging specialist, hint, hint, that might have something to do with our topic today, and a relationship counselor. And she's the popular internet radio host of her own show, which is entitled Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra. And she's also the co-author of an award-winning sex and relationship book entitled The Marriage of Sex and Spirit. Okay, I'm running out of breath here, but she's also co-director of the Integrative Arts Institute and founder of the Sacred Courtesan School of Feminine Mystique and Power. She's the creator of the Village Model of Shamanic Soul Coaching, Reclaiming the Treasures of Spirit Lost in the Dark of Trauma. And I've got to tell you, I've had the pleasure of working with her on her telephone sessions, and it's just amazing. I was able to tell her about a dream I had, and she cleared things up for me right away, and now every time I have that dream, I know what it means. It's really helped me gain a lot of insight, just not only on the dream, but, you know, dreams just trying to send us messages. So on my life path, this woman has been an important influence. Francesca, thank you so much for gracing us with your valuable time today, and welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
I'm delighted to be here, Veronica. You're so delicious. Since you've met me, I've also met you. So I get the honor and pleasure and privilege of knowing what a beautiful and dynamic woman and presence you are. So I'm so happy to be here for you and with you for an hour.
Well, thank you. And we've got a fabulous topic tonight. I've been just kind of biting at the bit to do this one. We're calling this one Cougar Luscious. Cougar Luscious, sexy aging and irresistible relating after 40. And we're also going to be talking, but this is specifically about women. For those of you who have been following the culture, current culture calls women cougars when they date younger men, which is kind of silly because older men don't get called anything when they date younger women except normal. But as a matter of fact, for myself,
some people are calling them lions.
That may be a new trend, but I have to tell you something. When I was married to a man who was 13 years older than me, and nobody ever put a label on him in the 27 years I knew him. Well, actually, we're still very good friends now. In the 27 years that I've known him, none of our friends or family ever tried to put a label on him. But as soon as we got a divorce and I started dating guys that were anywhere from 10 to 14 years younger than me, my stepson called me a cougar. Actually, what he said was, "Do you know what a cougar is?" He said it in a very disapproving tone. But I do think it's a little more charged than the idea of, a 10 to 15 year span between a man and a woman. If you start getting like the 20 or 30 years between a man and a woman, then, yeah, they'll call him a dirty old man. But if it's 10 or 15 years, it's, I guess maybe they just call him lucky. Anyway,
well, you know, people listening to your show, they are the ones that are stepping outside the box, the sex without shame, the life without shame, and really celebrating who we are. And this is a part of that. It's saying that male or female, we are drawn to people in unique ways for their mind, for their heart, for sometimes for their beauty, sometimes for that delicious energy that people have that we just want to eat with a spoon. It feels so good to be near them. And those kinds of exchanges happen regardless of whether we share a similar age or have an age difference. They're part of the magic and the mystery of relieving.
Well, and just to kick our show off here with it, we've already got a listener comment. This is from Rafael Cruz over on Facebook. If those of you who want to post your comments and have me read it live on the show, just go over to your Facebook page and look for Veronica Monet, and you can friend me. I'll be checking my friend request during the show, and go ahead and pop over to my wall and join the conversation. Anyway, Rafael Cruz says, I prefer women over 40 because they know what they want and they're not afraid to let you know.
We love you. And one of the things that... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I just wanted, before we actually jump into the topic, I was thinking maybe you could explain to us a little bit about your credentials as an empowered aging specialist. Maybe tell us a little bit about what that is. How do you empower your clients around aging?
I think each of us can empower ourselves, but we can also look and seek support. And there are many ways we can do that. We can go to a naturopath, an osteopath, an anti-aging medicine specialist, or an empowered aging specialist. Someone such as myself, I've done research, I've gone to the anti-aging medicine conferences, I've spoke to and listened to some of the best physicians from all over the world talk about the latest breakthroughs in optimizing our aging process. And this, the information is out there, but how I support my clients is I listen to them. I listen to how they're describing their moods. Are they depressed? Are they anxious? Have they lost a sense of vitality in life? Have they lost libido? I also will be looking at skin tone. Have they gained weight? Have they gained wrinkles? And a lot of these are actually due to aging that can be slowed down or even reversed if we balance not just something as dramatic as our hormones, but even our nutraceuticals. The scientists, the physicians are now saying that literally we are what we eat, in a sense that it sounds trite, but that our intestines can get microscopic tears in them. And if they do have those tears, we're literally absorbing into our bloodstream things that shouldn't be there. And when those little things get into our bloodstream, the white blood cells attack. And so we hold on to weight, we have inflammation, we have headaches, we have fatigue. And there's so much about really working with someone who can help you become aware of what foods vitalize you and what foods detract from your vitality or, in fact, give you symptoms of illness, and also what nutrients are needed. They're calling them nutraceuticals today instead of vitamins or supplements. And a nutraceutical is when a physician, osteopath, naturopath is actually prescribing for you based on your blood type, based on your genetic history, the kinds of nutrients that will balance out your body. And I've been on this journey for myself, noticed huge difference, and I'm not a physician, so I can't prescribe, but I can encourage them to work with a physician to get certain tests. I can certainly share from my own experience what has been beneficial to me, and also give them a framework that aging can be fun, that there are gifts of aging. We often think of, oh, aging is a curse, but what about the opportunities and gifts of aging? Whereas Rafael said, we know more about our bodies, more about what we want and what we don't want. There's an opportunity when we age to weave together things that felt like they were irreconcilable when we were younger. I like this and I like this. I'm a free person, but I like structure. I'm an artist, but I have a scientific mind. And when we're younger, how do I put all my interests together? How do I put the different pieces of myself together? And there's an opportunity in aging to actually weave them into a beautiful tapestry for ourselves and our world. There's an opportunity to become a wisdom keeper for our people when you're over 40, over 50, over 60. You've spent years living. You've learned something. You've accomplished something. So I help people harvest their accomplishments and their learnings, rather than, you know, the critical mind often looks at, oh, what I didn't do, oh, what I didn't accomplish. So part of what I do is help them sift that out and give them a sense of harvesting, looking newly at their own life and being able to move forward with a beautiful new vision.
Yeah, and all of that sounds amazing. I think too. I'm sure, well, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but it sounds like you do because of the health practitioners that you're touting there. It really is about finding what works for you as an individual, and this is where a lot of people go wrong, is they try to go on the diet that works for their friend, or they try to eat like somebody else told them they should eat, and that's not always necessarily what's good for them, especially when you take into consideration how prevalent food allergies are at this point.
Exactly. We definitely encourage all of our listeners to individualize and to learn. One of the possible gifts of aging is to come home to our bodies, that sensitivity that in a way almost increases as we age. We can't eat what we used to eat. We can't do what we used to do in certain ways. The gift in that is I get to listen to my body more and more closely, and the outcome of that is I actually can feel better. I can come home to my body in new ways, and I believe that sacred sexuality is actually easier as we age.
I think that, you know, I tell my clients that they come to me and they're very upset about, that their vagina or their penis isn't working the way it used to. And I go, well, you know, first of all, yes, it is quite possible for you to take actions that may or may not influence the functioning of your vagina or your penis. But I think more importantly, this whole aging process is an invitation for us to expand our definition of sex and not to have it to be so what I would call procreative centrist, you know, where the focus is so much on procreative sexual acts, which are fine and good. But there's just so much more to this banquet that we call sexuality that a lot of people are missing out on because their focus is very much on, you know, penis, vagina, sex. And so I like to look at aging as an invitation from the universe for you to partake in the rest of this beautiful banquet that you've been missing out on.
A savoring, an opportunity to start savoring what is available for us in life and in love. And with that idea...
So then you would agree to some extent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is that one of my clients was having some challenges with her beloved and finding that sweet spot of their styles. You know how we sometimes have different styles and different pacing around sexuality. And they were having more and more time together where they were in bed caressing and kissing and just, you know, cuddling. And she said that, you know, they were, because certain positions and certain things were challenging for them, they just were in this caressing and kissing and breathing and cuddling. And she said it got so wonderful that she literally felt like she was in a trance, and that for days afterwards, she felt a sense of bliss and would just think back to that time together and feel a little rush of yumminess and her heart feeling very open and hardly waiting to see him again. And I said, well, do you realize you're practicing tantric sex? And she said, really? And I said, yes, you are. And I said, because in tantric sex, The intention that we're holding is one of communion, is one of bliss. It's not about the way that we get there. It's this lightly held intention that allows us to literally just explore and have joy and have a dance of breath and touch, and then see where it goes as long as we're in communion, as long as we're in bliss. And whereas what we might think of as regular sex or the way that our culture talks about sex, like you said, it's very... You know, have we had intercourse yet? Has somebody had an orgasm or ejaculation yet? You know, that it's very heavy, you know, where I sometimes feel I have to perform for my partner or produce for my partner, or somebody has failed. Where in tantric sex, you know, are you and I here together? Are we relaxing into how precious that is? Are we savoring again that sense of your body and my body being together in this moment? then whatever else happens, you know, it's all bliss. It's all joy.
About a year and a half ago, I had a peak sexual experience that was very, very unexpected. And, you know, you could hang labels on it, but basically it was something verging on a kundalini awakening, although some people would probably not label it as that. But it lasted for an entire month. It was so delicious. It was so amazing that I did not want to ruin it with an orgasm. Now, you know, those are all judgment-laden terms, but it does express how I was feeling at the time, which was, no, I wouldn't want to have an orgasm because it might take me away from this amazing state that went on and on and on for 30 days. So,
yeah, I encourage our listening audience to try, to actually try what you're pointing to, is that heightened states of heart-open bliss and arousal where we literally start, they say, vibrating at another frequency. And there's a tendency in our culture to say, oh, well, then do I have blue balls or am I suffering because I haven't come to this completion? But what I hear you saying is you were able to just breathe into it, to enjoy it, to expand into it. And what was it like? I mean, did the world feel more, a little brighter, more delicious? Were the sounds more wonderful? How did it feel to be in that state for a month?
Well, first of all, how I got there was really by using some traditional tantric techniques, but I wasn't doing them intentionally. And you know how you were talking about people accidentally doing tantra? I've been studying tantra for a good 20 years. But this particular tantric practice that I did, I really have been kind of resistant to it. I didn't like this whole idea of the lingam and the yoni melting into each other over time. And I'm like, boy, that sounds really frustrating.
That's weird.
But I was put into a position where my sexual partner and I were a mismatch as far as the size of our genitals were concerned. And because I tend to be rather small, and he was extremely large. And we were engaging in an attempt to have intercourse, which actually took 3 days for us to achieve. And it's not like we were, you know, in each other's arms for 3 solid days, but we tried night one, you know, the first evening, then the second evening, then the third evening. And each time, it was interesting, we just got like 3 inches a day. And during this time, it took an extended period of time to even get 3 inches of penetration. So during this time, we are in a missionary embrace where our heart chakras are aligned. We are gazing into each other's eyes. We were exchanging, circulating each other's breath. But again, not necessarily trying to do a particular technique. It was by sheer happenstance that all this was happening. And you know, I had some awareness of it because I've studied this stuff, but I was like, you know, mostly trying to cope with the circumstances in front of me. And on day 3, we achieved full penetration, and I did not have an orgasm. Instead, I went someplace that was brand new to me, absolutely brand new to me. And it felt like a huge surrender and a huge opening. And and interestingly enough, you know, I suppose to stay on our topic here, which is Cougarlicious, this was with a younger lover. So he was about 11 years younger than me. And he had no
thanks for weaving that in.
Huh?
I said,
sorry,
thanks
what?
For weaving that in. Younger man.
He had no knowledge of Tantra at all, had not read about it or studied about it or experienced it or anything. So some of this, I found myself just kind of navigating our lovemaking, so it went in that more tantric direction. But, again, you know, mostly I was just trying to deal with the matters at hand, and what came out of it was just this spontaneous thing, and I was having vaginal contractions that would send waves of ecstasy and pleasure through my body. And they did last for a month. I went online to try to find out what was happening to me. Because I started to become a bit concerned it might never go away, which, of course, is very human. It seems like we, oh, too much pleasure, you know. But it was, for me, just so pleasure-oriented that I actually did come up against my resistance about enjoying life too much, which I also think is a cultural message that a lot of us are infected with. But delicious. And again, it was following so many of those things that are proscribed, you know, with the heart chakra alignment and the eye gazing and circulating each other's breath and taking an extremely long time to achieve penetration. And then not really moving around much either. So this was
One of the things that I say is that really sacred sexuality and Tantra is one culture's version of sacred sexuality, and sacred sexuality belongs to all cultures and all religions, is that sacred sexuality is our birthright. It's actually encoded into our DNA, that when we first fall in love with someone, we naturally look into their eyes. We naturally caress them all over. We naturally spend hours cuddled and exploring and breathing and, you know, maybe having intercourse, but also exploring every inch of our beloved. And it's natural to, you know, breathe deeply and feel a sense of awe or relaxation every time we see our beloved. And it's so natural when we're first falling in love. And then that's supported by internal body chemistry, phenylethylalanine, endorphins, oxytocin, that are a higher high than anything external we could ever buy. And then later those drugs wear off. And that's when the practices that cultures have taught us, like the Tibetan or the Indian culture have taught us, to remember, how did we act when we were in love? Oh, we breathed together. We caressed one another. We looked into one another's eyes. We just held each other and being moved and in awe. That it's really, it's as if these cultures, and maybe they did, extrapolated the practices from falling in love itself. And you know what? We do the practices, and we have that experience again of opening to love, of opening to bliss, and it's circumstances like yours. And I actually get to hear them all the time, because one of the ways I teach Tantra 101 is to ask a room full of people, have you ever had a peak sexual experience? And so many people will raise their hands and say that they have. And I'll invite them to just share the story, you know, what happened. And as they share the story like you did, I extrapolate or pull from the story to say, you accidentally stumbled on an ancient tantric practice, but it's part of us. It's normal. It's sacred sexuality is right around the corner for any of us.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I have a lot of friends and colleagues who are studying tantra, like getting PhDs in the topic, and that's great, that's fine, you know, no criticism of that, but one of the things I find very disturbing is how, you know, if somebody says they're talking about tantra, then somebody else will come along and say that's not tantra, and then that person will assert what tantra is, and then there'll be another person going along saying, no, you're wrong, that's not tantra. And down to where I actually know one person who believes you're not studying Tantra unless you're studying with his tantric master. All other Tantra is invalid unless you actually studied it with this particular tantric master. So I just think that's kind of an unfortunate aside. And I like to...
Oh, my goodness, that would be fundamentalist
my,
Tantra.
It is. It really is. There's a lot of fundamentalist scientists and fundamentalist liberals. It's amazing. But I do usually use the word sacred sexuality because it gives people a broader perspective. And then they don't have to get bogged down with the dogma that comes with membership. And I think that... I agree with you. Not only do I think that humans were born to be tantric or indulge in sacred sexuality, I think sex is sacred, and the animals engage in conscious sexuality all the time because, you know, they just naturally breathe into it. They naturally contract their PC muscles. They wouldn't know how not to. And it's us humans who really do get so catapulted out of our bodies, and a lot of it, I think, because of birth trauma, but, you know, for a variety of reasons, a lot of us are having a great deal of difficulty reconnecting with our bodies on an energetic level. So, yes,
we can invite our listeners right now to relax the jaw a little bit, waggle it around, relax the belly, relax, if we're seated, relax a little bit more into our chair. Relax yet energized, vital, yet supported by the chair. If we're standing, our feet are on the ground, to feel that pressure into the earth, that pressure that's also support. I'm connected to the earth. I'm connected to my body all the way from the top of my head to the very sole and the soles of my feet. And allow that awareness, kind of check into our bodies, down our bodies. You know, how does my chest feel, my belly, my back, my genitals, my thighs, my calves, my shins, my feet? How am I feeling? Just allow ourselves to come down and land a little bit more in our body wherever we are right now.
Beautiful. And that's a great setup for you to now tell us the shamanic meaning of cougar.
Well, when I was hearing the word cougar bandied about being a shaman, a perspective of a shaman is that there are multiple levels of reality, that of energy, of life, that all are valid and valuable, that the soul, energy itself, is always speaking to us in symbols, in patterns. And so I thought, well, cougar is a symbol. What is it? Is in the shamanic language. And in the shamanic language, a cougar is graceful and balanced, power and leadership. And I thought to myself, if that's the soulful meaning, the shamanic meaning of cougar, then as an empowered woman, as maybe a post-feminist woman, how could I not be a cougar? Because I want to be in balance and grace, power, and leadership. And I feel that it is time for women to take more and more of that in partnership with men.
So let's see if I caught your meaning. So basically the cougar is powerful and balanced?
And leadership.
And, so and leadership. Ah, leadership. Okay. So it's interesting.
Balanced leadership. Power.
Come up for cougars.
Power as well.
Power as well. Okay, so you think cougar is an invitation for women to step into their power?
In a graceful, balanced way, a noble leader, as it were. Because we can be powerful and we can be leaders, male or female, and be tyrants, be dominators. You know, it's my way or the highway. And we've seen a lot of that in our world, and we in a way have the world that has resulted out of that. But there's an opportunity for women as we age to step into grace and balance with our power and our leadership. Now that's a new paradigm. Now that's something truly delicious for our world.
Okay, and that certainly does point to the idea of women perhaps giving the world a different definition of power so that it's not always oppressive or domineering. What about the way women feel about their bodies, their sexuality, their emotions, and their aging? Do you think our culture is particularly hard on women when it comes to getting older?
I do. I think that our culture is hard on young women. It's hard on, you know, middle-aged women, and it's hard on women getting older. And the hardness is that very kind of cookie-cutter way that beauty is reflected from the media to women. And so that even a woman who's 13 or 14 or 15 and, you know, just budding into her gorgeous young beauty thinks that there's something not good enough. Maybe she's not developed enough, or she doesn't have big enough breasts, or she's not curvaceous enough, or she's not tall enough, so she's already beating herself up, or she's too heavy, She doesn't look like the models in the pictures, and models are only 4%.
Or she's too tall, or too skinny, or has too big a breast. So you can't win, basically, by the cultural standards.
By the cultural standards. And every woman, and it's important for our men to know this, is that women carry this as a huge suffering. No matter how beautiful you find a woman, is that inside she feels that she's not beautiful enough, that she notices what's wrong with her body. And it really, it's like walking on broken glass. She feels this suffering about herself all the time. And that's why we say, well, am I really pretty? But am I really pretty? But does this really look nice? But honey, am I really pretty? And, you know, which men go, why does she keep asking? I don't understand. And it's because of these cultural messages that we've been bombarded with and are still bombarded with. So now we're young and we're trying to get older and we're trying to get thinner or taller or shorter. And then we've passed it. Whatever that perfect point is, that the illusory perfect age and perfect weight, we're either below it or above it. And now we're trying to get back to it. And there is this bombardment of the culture that says that somehow we're going to be marginalized as we age, that we're not going to be valuable in the same way, that whatever beauty that we had for one shining moment when we were 19 and a half, you know, is now, the rest of our life is about losing that beauty. Now, that is America. That is not all cultures in any way. Is that
I know. I have girlfriends who have gone to, a girlfriend of mine went to France. She spent a year in France, and she said she just loved being there because the women were celebrated even when they were in their 50s and 60s. And consequently, since the women over there felt like they were still viable and still beautiful, they actually went to the trouble to look viable and beautiful. And so, you know, there's kind of a fringe benefit to that, I suppose, if we tell women, you know, give them the message that they count, and that we aren't discarding them after a certain age, that we can actually make them more beautiful inside and out by imbuing them with that that love and that nurturing and that confidence. And,
certainly, for man.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, certainly, for man. You know, tells a woman that she's gorgeous and beautiful and she has great breasts and she should show them off more, you know, beautiful legs and, you know, really encourages her. And, you know, a man can really turn a woman around and have her find her beauty. A man who really knows how to appreciate, a galanteador, as they used to call them in the 18th century Spain, it's similar to the courtesans of Italy, you know, is that he can really bring the best forward in a woman. And we women need to bring this into ourselves. I mean, there was a point, Veronica, where I said to myself, I can accept this cultural curse around my body and around my aging and around being a woman and having a woman's emotions and a woman's, you know, a physique. Or I can break free of this cultural curse and I can establish a new paradigm and be that graceful and powerful leader. And when I took that on, not only for myself, but for all women, in my 40s, and I'm now 52, in my 40s, I started to have more and more men tell me I was beautiful. I had more and more men stop me on the street corner and ask me, you know, if I was married or if they had a chance. And I'm 52, and this is still happening. Just last week, I was at a poetry reading of a friend of mine, and I was walking out the door, and a man ran after me, and he asked me what my relationship status was, and he held my hand, and he said, "You make my eyes happy."
Oh.
It's a great line for our men who are listening. I totally adored it. And this happens to me more and more as I age, not less and less. And I have girlfriends that are younger than I am, who I look at and think are more beautiful, who are saying that they feel marginalized, that they feel men don't look at them, and they create it because I'll be walking down the street with them, and I'll see all the men looking at them, but they don't see it. So they're literally creating a universe in which they are ugly and old and not cared for. Well, I don't want to live in that universe. I want to live in the universe that I am gorgeous and I got it going on and I'm the bomb and, you know, and I make people's eyes happy and I get to be adored more and more and I get to adore and be adored.
Well,
I'm in that universe, and I like it, and
very,
I invite people
positive.
To join me in it.
That's very, very positive. Yeah, I definitely have found that, you know, right after my divorce and I started dating younger men, I remember being kind of, you know, I hadn't really been paying attention to, other than as a professional escort, I wasn't paying a lot of attention, like, you know, certainly not younger men because they didn't have the wallets. Most of my clients were older, or they were either my age or older. So it was fascinating for me to find all these younger men who just really wanted to spend time with me and found me attractive, and that was, for me, a new experience. I had always, as a young woman, gone out with guys who were either my age or older. So I really hadn't had the younger man experience, which is, you know, by the current cultural definition, part of the cougar identity, that, you know, you're dating younger men. What about you? Have you dated younger men?
Well, my beloved is 13 years younger than I am. And
wow.
So I'm 52 and he's 38. So he's, I'm technically a cougar. And at the same time, I would say that I find men delightful. I find, you know, maleness and a man who knows how to celebrate a woman and can celebrate being a man and wants to evolve and grow and explore and experiment and appreciate me, that's a great man whatever age he is. So I don't feel that I have to date younger men. I feel that I want to date great men, and what, regardless of their age, and great men exist at every age. And in this case, my last partner was a year older than me, and in this case, my beloved is 13 years younger, but they're both, you know, they both are great men.
And I think that's really the key. I mean, at first I think I was just fascinated with the younger man thing, and the fascination wore off in a short period of time because, you know, people are people. And you know, aside from perhaps, you know, skin tone and rock hard abs or whatever, it's so much about what's in somebody's heart, what's in their mind, what's in their soul. But certainly being able to relate to people from various different generations instead of limiting yourself, I think it's very empowering. We've got another comment here from Sean Sparks. He says, the country song, Older Women Make Beautiful Lovers, explains it all. A little chuckle there from the wall on Facebook.
Oh, thank you, Sean. And, you know, I was going to say one more thing about when we're with a younger person, that there's different gifts. You know, if we're with somebody that's older than we are, we have an opportunity to be mentored. We have an opportunity. Often they have more life experience, sometimes more money. They can help our dreams come true because they're a little further along the path. If we're with someone younger than we are, they bring a vitality to us, an opportunity to connect to the evolving cultural edge. And we get to bring that mentoring and that gifting of a spark into their vision back to them. If we're with someone our own age, we get to share a similarity of life memory and experience. There's gifts in every combination.
There absolutely are. And I want to check out with our listeners here, by the way, if you don't want to go over to Facebook, I know some people have privacy issues over there. You can call in anonymously if you prefer, or give us your name. Our number is 415-287-3601. Once again, 415-287-3601. You can also dial 530-413-4511. That number again is 530-413-4511. Maybe you have a question for Francesca. She actually is an empowered aging expert, and she will be happy to give you some feedback on how you yourself can become cougar luscious. Now, can you explain that just a little bit further for our listeners? What do we mean by cougar luscious?
Well, the cougar, of course, we talked a little bit about the cougar, the noble and balanced power, grace, and leadership, and then luscious, that sense of embracing the body and embracing the senses. And I love the term luscious. It feels ripe to me. So a sense of celebrating our own ripe ripening beauty. It's not the same beauty as a 20-year-old or 30-year-old. It is more luscious. My sweetheart loves to grab parts of me, and he's like, "Oh, you're so soft, and you're so. I just want to melt into you. I just want to, you know, surrender into you because I have that luscious, soft, voluptuous roundness that, you know, a young woman has a beauty, a more Diana-ic beauty, that more often more lithe, more lean, a taut musculature, which is beautiful in its own right. And often as we age, we naturally just have this pillowing softness for our lovers. So, luscious.
Luscious, absolutely. Like the Garden of Eden is what it makes me think of. What are some of the archetypes of empowered aging? What do we mean by that even?
Well, I think it's so important for, male or female, I really encourage us to find models and archetypes that are ahead of us in life and culture that we can say, I want to be like that. I want to, one archetype could be, a Christmas tree is an archetype, or the Easter Bunny is an archetype. It's something that the culture knows, that has a mythos with it, and I encourage us to find those archetypes that, a pirate in the sense is an archetype, is that have us feel like, ooh, I want to become that. So there, for some of us women, there's Hecate. Hecate was a wonderful goddess who embodied both the maiden, the very young, nubile, the mother, the more life-giving, birthing, rounded, and also the crone in her wisdom, in her sageness. And she was beautiful in each aspect. And she was able to transform. And may each of you be blessed with knowing a woman who carries all three aspects. And from moment to moment, you can look at her and see the young girl that she was and the mother that she has in her, and the wise woman that she's becoming. I was blessed with a mother that was like that. And so we want to do some research. What about Hecate? What about Maya Angelou? What about Cher? What about Diane de Poitiers, who was the maîtresse, the mistress of Henry IV in France in the 1700s, to actually find out about women who were, and she was an older woman. It was a scandal of the day.
Oh my.
And I think she was something like 17 years older than he was, and she met him when he was a very young man. And I think like he was in his teens when he fell in love with her, and it was an extremely long love affair, and she was the queen of his heart, really. And, to find these things and say, it exists. If it exists for one woman throughout time, it exists for me. If there are goddesses that did this, then the divine is in me. That's what I mean by an archetype or finding those archetypes. I mean, before, by the time I die, I hope to be an archetype for many women that they can say, ooh, I want to be a Francesca or a Veronica.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure you will be. I have no doubt about that. Or just, you probably already are for some people. I know one of my favorite archetypes is Lilith. I'm not sure if she ages or not. She certainly is an uppity and assertive woman who breaks a lot of rules and charts her own territory. But I think it's important for women to find those archetypes too, because of the fact that we're not given a lot of role models. I think that is very disturbing in especially our popular media. Those women who are older are very actively and aggressively modifying their aging process so that we don't actually get to witness it. We see little hints of it, but I was reading online that they're starting to have Botox parties at, age 27 now, which is kind of a scary thought. So there is definitely this fear of looking older, And what would you say to women who are trying to make friends with their wrinkles?
You know, what I would say is to that journey to make friends with our body and our looks is so important. And there's a paradox in here. And the paradox that I would hold is, on the one hand, I want to make friends with the body that I have. I'm 5'4". I'm not 5'10". I have blue eyes. I don't have brown eyes. I have fair skin. I don't tan well. It's not healthy for me to be in the sun. So I have the body that I have and the age that I have. Now, on the other hand, I do believe that my body and my clothes are an artistic canvas for me to play with. I personally like to play with it more in terms of color and style and fabric and jewelry and, you know, playing with my hair versus I have not done any procedures. And, you know, I haven't done any Botox. I haven't done any cosmetic surgery. I am the age that I am. Now, on the other hand, I want to be healthy. So I do the research to say, you know, what are my food sensitivities? Let me stay away from that. What are, I like to, you know, exercise smarter, not harder. So I actually exercise very little. And my favorite exercises are dancing or making love. But I believe in exercise. I believe in, you know, picking the positions. And I'm getting, I spend, some of my favorite positions are me on top, and my arms are getting much stronger. But I actually don't do the yee-haw position where I'm just, you know, sitting up and down bouncing. I'm normally, you know, forward where my heart is touching the heart of my partner, so I'm resting on my arms. You know, so to really look at how can I be healthy and how can I love my life? There's something irresistible about a woman who loves her life. And, oh, the French again. There's a term called la belle laide in French, which means beautiful ugly. That some of their most amazing women were not classically beautiful, but they had that oomph, that, you know, that we just, when we feel it, someone's just so irresistible. And no one can
absolutely
take away
That applies for both men and women, and I think it's really underestimated in our culture. We're so focused on this exterior formula of, you know, this many abs and that much buttocks, and it's like everybody, you said it, cookie cutter, very cookie cutter approach to appearance, which is also infecting our young men now, so that they're developing eating disorders. And it's so unfortunate, because I love those movies from the 50s where the actresses were either too heavy or too flat-chested, and the men were, you know, too skinny or had irregular shaped faces, but they were all so hot. And a lot of it had to do with the way they walked, the way they talked, the way they looked at you through, you know, looked at the camera, obviously. Just amazing level of sensuality that I think is lost now with this huge focus on the exercise. And no offense to exercise, I happen to love exercise, but I just think our focus has gotten really skewed. And I love that whole idea of embodying sensuousness, you know? There's a story about Marilyn Monroe. She's walking down the street with a friend of hers in New York City, and nobody notices her, and nobody asks her for an autograph, and her friend's dismayed and says, "I don't understand it. You're the great Marilyn Monroe. Why doesn't anybody want your autograph?" And she said, "Watch this." And she just starts swishing her hips back and forth, and all of a sudden everybody went, "Marilyn!" So, you know, a lot of it was how she moved.
Exactly. There's a never underestimate who you're being. And there's that saying that I can't hear what you're saying, because who you're being is louder than what you're saying. And there is 80% of us outside of words. So, and outside of looks, see, that's the other part that people don't recognize all the time, is that the way that I look at you, the quality of my voice, the way that I stand, all of that will communicate something that will either allure you, and male or female, and call you closer to me, or push you away. And I really have known several women who have gotten eye procedures, in particular, spent thousands of dollars and told me that they would never do it again, that it was so painful. And the result was actually kind of minor. It wasn't the dramatic, you know, I look like I'm 16 again, that they expected. And the process was so painful for them. So and on the other hand, I would say that, you know, certainly if someone's in an accident, they have scarring, there's, you know, there are times and places where we do need to allow ourselves to have surgery and shift something in some way. We don't want to have hard and fast rules. But I think what you and I are both concerned about, Veronica, is how literally some people are getting addicted to surgeries, where they go back for another one and another one and another one and more Botox, and they're so afraid of being who they are.
I think it's sad when I turn on the television and I see some woman pushing 70 who's got fewer wrinkles than the 30-year-old woman that's interviewing her. I'm just like, what? You're so afraid of wrinkles, you can't even have the number of wrinkles a 30-year-old has? I mean, give me a break. It's not very extreme now. A lot of the faces on television do not move. If you we've gotten so used to watching them, I don't think we're necessarily, but I challenge the listeners out there, next time you turn on the news, well, not the news, but, you know, the television, watch somebody who's got their own talk show, notice how their face doesn't move. I think that's a scary thought. I'd like to, you know, have some emotion. Like, what happened to raising your eyebrows? Nobody can be even capable of doing that anymore because it's all Botoxed out of existence.
It is frightening because nobody gets out of life alive. We're on this time-limited journey together. And I hope that all of us know at least one person who's aging naturally who we just find adorable, alluring, charming. You know, may we each be blessed with knowing someone like that, because then that becomes that model, that archetype, that it's possible for us to be that. There's the journey that Veronica and I are talking about, male or female, for a man or a woman listening, is you can be irresistible just the way you are. With your, you know, bumps and warts or whatever. And there is work. I'm not saying there's not work to be done, but rather than the work of going under the knife, it's the work of developing ourselves.
And it's about energy.
Life's
journey of life is so much about our energy. You know, whether we're learning
finding the courage.
Okay,
yeah, I think that it's the courage to let ourselves out, because so many of us, and I'll, you know, speak for myself, I was raised in a conservative religious background where the body was suspect, you know, I'm supposed to dominate my body. Sexuality was definitely considered either dangerous or negative outside of marriage in particular. Emotions were also considered, you know, maybe dangerous. One shouldn't be too emotional. And food was dangerous because I was supposed to be thin. So I couldn't appreciate food. That would be dangerous to me. I couldn't appreciate my own desires. That would be dangerous to me. I couldn't trust my own emotions. Well, what was the result of that is I was very depressed and very confused about who I was. And I either didn't have relationships or they didn't work very well. And it was a very painful time. And it took a lot of courage and sometimes therapy and sometimes workshops and sometimes reading great books like yours. It took a lot of, you know, focused work and time for me, hopefully other people will be faster, to kind of peel back the layers that culture and society and experience had put on me, and to allow that I got to want what I want. Do I like this kind of food or that kind of food? Do I like this kind of touch or that kind of touch? What delights me? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to talk to? How do I want to dress? And as I took the risk to find this out and allow that I could become myself because I was the only person I was guaranteed to spend my life with, little by little, I felt happier and my energy got bigger. So suddenly I'm in my body. I'm in my senses. and I'm more and more attractive. That's the part. That's the gift of aging. That's opportunity. That's part of the journey if we let ourselves engage in it.
And you are really in your body, Francesca. if there would be one overarching definition of you for me, you know, being in the same room with you, is that you are just so embodied. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, wonderful energy to be around. We are just running out of time here, and we just flew by. There's so much to say about this, and I hope we can take this topic on again. I'm sure that there's a lot of people who need it, and there was so much we didn't get to talk about. We didn't get to talk about how to build a cougar altar, and that you lead empowered aging visualizations and body blessings. But I'm imagining that people can contact you in person and, have their own private session with you to learn how to do these things. How would you like those people to contact you?
Well, I would love them to contact me. And you can also receive a free half-an-hour phone coaching session, you know, that assessment and some guidance to see whether or not we're a match for something even longer and more delicious by contacting relationshipdiva@gmail.com. That's relationshipdiva@gmail.com or my website, www.lifedancecenter.com, www.lifedancecenter.com.
LifeDanceCenter?
Mm-hmm.
LifeDanceCenter.com. Okay, we'll put that up on Twitter, too. Okay. Wow, you're just such an inspiration. Thank you so much for doing the work that you do. I'm sure the planet Earth thanks you, too. And I hope you'll come back and be in the shame-free zone.
I would love to, and thank you, sweetheart, for everything that you do. You are a blessing to our world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And good night, Francesca.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mentu sikap berita?